And they stick their tongues out and all sorts.
I don't have a song this week.
Do you not have a song?
No.
I'm quite relieved about that, to be honest with you.
I like
you singing to me, but...
Nobody's really given us any comments.
Well, that's fine. I've got a comment for you. I once worked with a guy who genuinely, he had such a lovely, rich, velvety voice. I used to ask him if he'd phone me up at night and read me Winnie the Pooh stories.
That is the worst limerick I've ever heard.
Thank you. He never did.
Did he get a restraining order?
No. Oh, man, a beautiful... He really had a beautiful voice, though.
Did he have an accent?
No. He kind of had a upper-middle-class sort of Hampshire accent, but not posh.
I like the Hampshire accent. It sounds almost... It's creamy.
Yeah.
It's got creamery butter in it.
But he had a very rich timbre to his voice. It was lovely.
Is that not just timber?
Yeah, it's French timber, though.
French for timber.
Yeah, which makes lovely furniture and voices.
Okay. So what I'm getting from that is we talked about whether or not I had any songs to sing this week.
Mm-hmm.
I said I didn't have any. You said, "Oh, I'm quite relieved or grateful," or something like that.
Yeah.
And then went on to talk about someone you knew who had a lovely voice.
Had a nice voice, yeah.
What are you? Should I be getting? Am I getting feedback? Are these notes?
No.
Are you basically saying I've got a horrible voice?
No, I was thinking how much I'd like you to sing me songs as I'm falling asleep, and then I did some free association. And remember that I used to see this guy at work. It was platonic, and mostly, and that he had a lovely voice. I wanted him to sing me songs.
So when you say that, okay, so it was me having a nice voice, I got confused. I'm feeling
voice.
Very raw. I don't think I really understand people at the moment.
I feel a bit raw.
But we can talk about that in a minute.
That'd be good.
How has Scarlett been this week?
She's been lovely. I had a new experience this week.
What was it?
I've never been to a swimming pool that is one of these modern water park type.
All right.
Is a place in Romsey near where we live.
Is it called the Romsey Rapids?
The Rapids. It's exactly what it's called. And we went there on Friday. I had Thursday and Friday off. I had the doctors on Thursday, which was as a result of that, I've today ordered my smoking quit kit.
Good.
So, Jane from the other podcast we do together is going to be my quit buddy.
Is she quitting too?
Yeah, so that's two of us.
Good for both of you.
Yeah, that's two of us in a really shitty mood for the first few weeks.
Oh, that'll be fun for me then on the upcoming Momcast, the comic book podcast that we do on Thursdays.
The moderately acceptable one.
Yes.
It's good. No, it's good.
It's the best weekly comic book podcast about comics recorded in Southampton on a Thursday night.
By a long way.
Yeah.
But yeah, we went to Romsey Rapids. That was a really enjoyable. It took about 2.5 hours we were in the water. It was lovely.
What was your changing room experience?
We had shared a cubicle.
Oh, so you had a cubicle?
Yeah, it's a cubicle. It's a family place, so there's cubicles.
So you didn't have to see any old man cock?
No, that's Tuesday nights down at the local swimming pool that I have to see old men's dinkles.
You and life partner Steve?
Jane's life partner Steve, yeah.
Yeah, we have to assert that he's Jane's life partner Steve on this podcast.
Well, I hope he's a partner of ours for life.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure how long any of us are going to live.
Well, who is? That's one of the things I went to. I went to a funeral this week on Saturday, which was very strange experience. I've been talking to you a fair bit. It was a cousin of mine. He was 42, quite young. Died of throat cancer, which is very sad. Also, kind of, as well as the visit to the doctors on Thursday, made me think really I need to give up smoking because it was smoking related. But a most interesting and eclectic service. He was a Maori, or his father was a Maori. So he was half Maori, but
did he have half a face tattoo?
No, he didn't have any face. He had no tattoos at all, actually, funny enough. But really interesting. He'd lived in London for the last 20 years and been at Birkbeck University, I think, pretty much for the whole time. He'd been there.
But he was a student.
Yeah, he was a keen member of the anti-war coalition. So the people from the guy from the anti-war coalition came and spoke. Said some really lovely things about him because it was, Many members of our family thought that really he shouldn't be at university and he should be getting a job. And, you know, we're relatively laid-back people, but
The anti-war person say, he always seemed to have plenty of time for us?
No, he didn't.
And did your side of the family go, did your side of the family go, well, I mean, he wasn't doing anything else?
No, but strangely, there was, I think it was a friend of his who he'd spent his final days at her house, but was the master of ceremonies for the funeral, if you like. It was a non-denominational service. But I'm sure they were part of it. There was a little barbed comment about Jason. Some people may have seen Jason's academic life as him not achieving. And I'm like, yeah, that was for us, wasn't it? Yeah.
Do you think it's fair to say that at weddings and funerals, this has just occurred to me, there's obviously the two sides of the family at a wedding. But is it also like the friends and the family are like the two sides of one's family too?
I think very much in this dynamic that Jay, bless him, there was the family and then his real family, which was his group of friends. And there was a lot about Jay had a very chaotic life, you know, and sort of there were reasons for that. But one of the things that was remarkable during the service, I have never been so close to a hacker before.
You mean someone who was coughing a lot?
No, I mean a Maori hacker, which is obviously the traditional war dance.
And so nothing to do with video computers.
No, nothing to do with Jim, the pretend Prime Minister from Yes Prime Minister.
Or the internet?
No, or the internet at all. There might have been some hackers there. There were some very seditious types. There were obviously lots of hippies and crusties.
I've been to funerals like that.
Yeah. But I swear to God, the hacker is quite. It blows your hair back when you're right up against it. And I swear to God, if there is I'm an agnostic, bordering on an atheist. I've almost made my mind up.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm more agnostic. So
I keep heading towards atheism, and then Richard Dawkins says something.
Well, and that makes me see atheism as absolutism, and I hate absolutism.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, blew my hair back, this hacker. But I swear, if there is a soul and an afterlife, they screamed his into it. It really was quite a.
Are they the guys who go, experience.
And they stick their tongues out and all sorts. Yeah, all that stuff.
I do that a little bit with Noah.
Yes.
The tongue, they go.
Little calm hacker. But yeah, it was quite a weird emotional day. Very strange individual.
I'm feeling quite emotional after doing that little bit of hacking. I didn't know that's what they called them.
Yeah, hacker.
Is it because they cough a lot afterwards?
I don't know.
Home there.
You racist.
What?
You're culturally insensitive.
I'm not. It's cultural appropriation.
You Greeks are all the same.
What was that?
I don't know.
I thought it was authentic.
It sounded a little bit more like someone doing a really off-colour impression of a Native American.
Are they saying something, or are they just making noises?
No,
is it not like ululating?
No, not at all. It is all like, basically, I mean, I think a lot of it came, like, you know, they'd be on in New Zealand and you'd have, like, you know, Polynesian sort of types in their boats coming. They'd be on the shore basically saying, we own this, fuck off, and we're very terrifying warriors.
Isn't it like in the Vikings and the Scottish and the Celts and the Beatles and the Stones. Mm. Isn't it like the Beatles and the Stones? Do you know that song? It's lovely.
Suck the marrow
out of bone.
I think I've got the album on my iPod. It's lovely.
They put the V in Vietnam. Mm. That is such a good album.
It is.
There are three really good songs on it.
Yes, there are. Shine On, Shine On. In a Chair in the House of Love.
Yeah.
I always remember that because not long after I'd started seeing Nicola, I was about maybe a year, and I was 16, and her parents threw a house party, and I got horribly drunk, completely coated their patio with my own puke.
Nice. And what then, were you like?
Yeah.
Like tracking around to make sure you covered everything?
I hurled so much. I'd been drinking beer, wine, and punch.
Oh.
On a teenage boozer's stomach, didn't work at all, completely legless, had to crash out on her bed, and at that time she had to sleep downstairs. And I remember, like, they took me out and I remember listening to that album, and I was lying on her bed.
So, look at me, tired, Tired of Being 17. Is that
that's
that?
It? Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Oh, that song. It's so pretentious, but I love it.
It is. It's all a little bit sixth form poetry, but it's very nice.
But it evokes that the second it I hear. But no, I didn't think when I was doing the hacker thing. Because
it's like it's meant to invoke the rage of their gods as well.
But
I
thought it was just
like
noises.
That. No, it's words.
I don't even mean that in an offensive way.
No, it's Maori words.
I thought it was like
ululating. Kumite, kumite, something. I can't remember. Right. Kora, kora, something like that.
Because when the Scottish and the Vikings, they were just like, rah, blah, 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 weren't they?
Which now I say it sounds a little bit like lyrics from that song from The Phantom Menace, doesn't it? Anyway,
sure.
It was very sad. But, we had a complicated adult relationship, but he was a much loved cousin, especially when I was younger. And he introduced me to a great many things that I cherish to this day. But it is strange how you have these very intense, strong relationships when you're young. It is weird how these family relationships change so much when we become adults.
This isn't exactly the same, but my cousin that was one of my best men at my
you
wedding.
You used to have
actually,
a very close
George.
Relationship with him, I'd say, wouldn't they?
We still do.
Yeah.
But he recently, I think I've forgotten a lot of my childhood, not deliberately, but just I feel very distanced from it. And he, including some of the embarrassing stuff, which was played at my wedding, but he's going through his cupboards at the moment. He's having a bit of a clear out, and he found this weird science fiction-y it's a gun that you point at your neighbours and you're supposed to be able to hear what overhear them.
Yeah.
Which is very much like an early 80s, probably a late 70s, early 80s thing. And because of the nature of it, because it's a bit science fiction-y, I think he kind of commented me into the Facebook thread.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think there was kind of this there's a slight pang there sometimes because I don't remember that stuff. I need to be reminded of it. And it's I remember very clearly, and I sort of say to Amy sometimes, when do you think our boy will be able to go and stay with his cousins and then they'll be able to come and stay with us? Because that was what we always used to do. I'd spend at least a couple of weeks with him and his parents in London, and we'd have one sort of a week. And then he'd come to Peterborough and stay with us, and we'd have a couple of weeks with my parents looking after us. And they were very different. I think I always really longed for the time when we were in London, and I think he saw the Peterborough time as being quite liberating because there was lots of riding bikes and stuff like that. So you just reminded me of that. But I mean, things start to get a bit awkward. I really didn't think that. I just assumed they were making noises.
No, I experienced something very strange as well. I've not had for a very long time. Was, oh my God, is that Jamie? Haven't you grown, Jamie?
Since when? How old were you when they last saw you?
Seven or eight. Is my Kiwi accent not hitting?
No. Well, okay. No, that was good. I like that. Was that Kiwi?
It was, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, because a lot of my family moved out to New Zealand in the 60s. But, yeah, that was really weird. Haven't you grown? Last time I met you, you joined some sort of a society. I don't know if you still do. You're into history or something. As like an 8 or 9 year old kid, I joined the National Trust.
Not the National Trust, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Right. So,
later became the British National Trust.
That's it, yeah. And that's when I had to leave because it got too left-wing. obviously it's weird that she's like, I'm a 38-year-old man, you're right, I've grown, and no, I'm no longer a member of the National Trust, I have grown, I've changed, and I'm not called Jamie anymore, that's what you all called me when I was little, but my parents failed to actually name me that, so, but...
Did you feel, like, quite sad, though, that nobody calls you Jamie?
I don't know.
Because you're always a James, aren't you? You're not a Jim.
No, I'm not a Jim.
Or a Jamie.
No, I'm James.
Or a Jambo.
Oh, no, I've been a Jimbo. I had mates who called me Jimbo when I was younger.
Can I call you Jamelia from now on?
You can call me Jamelia. I'd rather we start the sunshine, but as that's not stuck. My wife was listening back to the episode where I asked to be known as Sunshine and took the piss out of me, saying how inappropriate the name is. And I looked at her and I go, do you not know me?
Doesn't know you at all.
I'm quite self-aware. I know I'm not a sunshiny person.
Oh, man.
It was quite, but she likes to listen back. So thank you for that, Nicola.
We don't. I'm quite lucky that my wife doesn't listen back, probably. We don't have enough screaming in our... I mean, we have screaming. Mm. We have people like... We've got that. That's pretty much what EastEnders is for. But we don't have, like, the wailing and the mournful noises and the shouting. We just don't do any of that stuff.
Well, we have a stiff upper lip. Well, we probably did. I mean, obviously, you had the picks, didn't you, and the... Like during, I think that was kind of because in this country we're an amalgamation of there is no sort of single cultural line back to our warrior times because we were subsumed into sort of more sophisticated cultures. But I mean, I suspect if you go back to like Boadicea's time and the Picts and all that sort of they had warrior spirit and they'd sort of try and scream and terrify and they wore the woad to attack. And that's what it's all about. It just goes back to a sort of more ancient way of the warrior, if you like, wasn't it? It's sort of, you know, it's all quite primal sort of stuff.
But we don't really mourn we don't really mourn noisily either. We mourn by complaining.
Yeah, stiff upper lip and regret. Which has been how I cope with this situation.
When I was unintentionally racist a minute ago, I'm still not entirely sure, but it feels quite good. The listener should try it. You should at some point try it. La! Feels quite good.
Who were you racising then?
I wasn't. I was just... It feels pretty good.
Well, wasn't it very popular in the 80s and 90s, primal scream therapy?
Yeah, but I mean, their second album, which is the one that everyone remembers,
Screamadelica,
was really good, but I think they kind of drifted back into Rolling Stones-esque sort of navel gazing after that. I'd like I can't remember any of their songs now.
The Girl with Swastika Eyes.
No, the Screamadelica album.
Oh, My Lilac Shine Song. Come Together. Loaded is the famous one.
Yeah, Come Together, he basically just sings Come Together for about 20 minutes.
Yeah, well, no, Come Together as One.
Yes, Come Together as One.
Come Together as One.
And the single was different from the album version, and then, like, completely.
And then there's someone that says Jungle a lot, I think, or something like that.
I'm going to have to go back to that. I've got it on vinyl somewhere. So it was like four 12-inch. It was two 12-inches rather than one 12-inch.
Double gatefold sleeve?
Yeah, but played at 33 RPM, for 45 RPM or something.
You sure you just didn't buy a DJ-friendly set?
I'm positive.
I'm sure you could buy it as a single long player.
I can't really remember. I was probably quite drunk most of the time.
I had it as a compact disc.
See, I still went to a little record shop. We should talk about that at some point.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff. But not today. So, but Scarlett's okay, though, yeah?
Oh, yeah, Scarlett. Yeah, no, she's very well. That was the worst thing about Saturday, actually. I didn't get to see her hardly at all, which was never a good day.
You kind of... The mortality thing becomes worse when you haven't got the... I had a pretty bad week at work last week, and just in general was feeling pretty sorry for myself. And there were a few points where I can't remember the exact, because it's been one of those weeks that's felt very long, and there's lots of detail I can't really remember. I failed my driving test last Friday morning, and someone asked me about it this morning, and I couldn't remember what they were talking about because it seemed like such a long time ago. Yeah. But there was one particular day, and I miss Noah and my wife a lot. Mm. Just in general, if I think about it, I do. But I had this moment where actually I couldn't think about anything else. And it happened a couple of times last week where I was just like, I texted her and said, can you please send me a picture of him? Because I feel like I haven't seen him in ages. It was only since that morning, which was probably a result of the time I was having, but might also just he's been in the house for a while now. It's not like you could love him more from the beginning bit. The love doesn't build, it just, because it couldn't possibly, it feels like, but it kind of changes and becomes a more comfortable sort of feeling. And
I think maybe the affection grows. The love doesn't, but the maybe the affection.
Yeah, I think. Although some people love such a nebulous thing to describe, and some people would describe it as the love growing. But yeah, I don't know what was happening last week beyond me feeling just a bit down anyway, but I was very much like, it became this need. And he's quite, he's a bit fractious at the moment. We're having a bit of trouble getting his sleeping patterns quite right. And I don't, I mean, I can't really complain because he sleeps through the night, and that's very difficult. A lot of people don't get that, and it can be pretty awful for them. So sorry, you guys. But we've had a little bit of trouble getting when he needs to eat, when he needs to have naps during the day quite right as he's growing, and he keeps having, he's had a couple of growth spurts and stuff. So he's been a bit grizzly and stuff. Like, he had his second massage, baby massage session today. And we know someone who does it, so it's more attainable. And apparently he's cried at both of them, which is really unusual for him. He doesn't, he doesn't tend to be, he's a pretty chilled out baby.
He doesn't care, obviously doesn't need massage.
No, well, maybe he does. Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe he's like, I'm already chilled out. What is it you're trying to say?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think maybe that's it. Maybe you're right. He did, he finally fit into one of his Superman tops. No, his Batman top, which is quite cool.
That was a happy moment. I had a Wonder Woman onesies and Batgirl onesies for Scarlett, and that was a very happy moment when she fit into those.
The Batgirl one presumably was more appropriate.
Well,
because the Wonder
onesie.
Woman would have all had bare... Oh, right, okay.
They were onesies with symbols on them rather than being outfits, per se.
Phew. Did the Wonder Woman one didn't have cleavage drawn onto it?
No, it didn't.
Because that'd
no.
be weird.
Well, it didn't come with that drawn onto it.
But now it has.
Yeah, well, I don't know where it is. It's long since passed its wearableness.
They go... They. It's so trite to say it, but it's really sad saying goodbye to some of those clothes. We
you'll be going through them at right knots at the moment, I imagine, as well, isn't it? Because it's funny because you get like I don't know about you, you get a baby. I remember this one that was really cool. It was white, colourful spots on it, and like the poppers were on the diagonal from the collar down to the foot. Thought they ever so cool. Couldn't wait for Scarlett to be able to wear it. She's finally big enough. It felt like only a few weeks and she was too big for it already.
I loved his first asymmetrical outfit. And I tend to find that a bit pretentious in grown-ups.
Yeah,
asymmetrical
absolutely.
Clothes. But no, I loved it. I thought it was great. And I think we had it was quite an annoying shopping trip. It was probably our first big baby shopping trip to Babies R Us and Mothercare at the weekend, trying to get replacement bottles, because he's about that age where all of his bottles are like, you need to replace the lids. And he needs, he's had slow flow, but now he needs bigger flow. They kept clogging up and getting a bit rubbish. And so we were looking for Tommy Tippy stuff that fit, that was right. Trying to get the Tommy Tippy bottles and also the lids was quite a faff. And we were wandering around all over the place. But then when we got home, I washed all of the new ones. And I washed all the old ones and all of the new ones. And I've just left all of the old ones on the side. And we put them in a little tub in case we need them. When are we going to need them?
We've still got ours. And every time I open the gate, they're in like a silver bowl. I look at them and go, why?
It's not like you can even use them for... Then, if you have another one, it's not like you can use the same nipples.
I think we're sort of psychologically holding on to the fact that we might have another one, so that's why we're all. I don't know.
Well, we can talk about that at some other point.
I probably shouldn't say I don't think we will if I'm saying my wife's listening back.
Well, we can talk about that at some other point. Okay. I know that, and you and I should talk about that at some point because my wife keeps asking me about everyone we know. Mm-hmm. So when are they going to do this? Did you see James? Yeah, well, so how is such and such? When are they going to do this? Are they going to do this? No. I'm like, we don't talk about that stuff.
Yeah, you too have a partner who thinks that men talk about things that... Sorry, that's not fair. That thinks you and I talk about things that we really definitely don't talk about.
We talk about emotional stuff, but we don't talk about that. It just doesn't come up. There's too much other stuff to talk
about.
That's
true.
There's the House of Love.
Yeah. Album. Oh, they were good, if a bit sixth form.
The Lars, people knew better, but the House of Love, I think, had something going.
They were very distinct and different, weren't they?
I can't go back and listen to the Cowboy Junkies, the Caution Horses.
No, I don't remember them.
It's too slow. At the time, I was like, they're really not in a hurry, and I love that.
Yeah.
And now I'm listening to it thinking, they're just too slow.
A bit Maisie Star.
Yeah, I still like Hope Sandoval's voice, though.
I liked it at the time, but never really. I don't understand the people still. We've a friend who really, really likes Maisie Starr.
Fade Into You.
Mm. Oh, lovely song.
Both makes me feel very sad and gives me an erection.
Wow. Nothing better than a sad erection.
There was a Jesus and Mary Chain. Apparently, she was with the guy from the Jesus and Mary Chain. There's a really famous Jesus and Mary Chain song that she's on, I think.
Okay.
And she was on something recently as well. She's good. I like Maisie Starr.
Oh, no, for sure, but...
Early 90s. Early 90s indie rock. We'll need to talk about that at some point. Or late 80s, maybe, even.
No, it's early 90s.
But, yeah, the Bottles...
Gotta love Neds.
Yeah. Yeah, I just remember there's a quote from the video they did. There's a fake music journalist in talking to them, and one of them says, "Never talk to seals about seal culling," which I think was about a music journalist talking to them about music journalists or something, but I don't know. But I've always remembered that. Don't talk to seals about seal culling.
That's clever.
I do love Ned. Oh man, can we just go home and stop listening
to music? I particularly like Cut Up.
Is that? I think I've got a version of. I think the only version I've ever had of that was with a strings.
Oh,
was like a string section or something.
Posh version.
They had their moments.
Yeah,
they gentrified.
That's right, Baby Bottles.
Baby Bottles. Yeah, I get the feeling you're not supposed to use them for the next baby anyway. The fact that we are replacing ours means that they've got a lifespan. You know, you can't. You subject them to pretty hot water quite a lot of the time.
Now, do you hand wash or do you use a microwave steriliser?
I hand wash.
Oh, dude.
And then we sterilise in a steriliser.
Yeah, a microwave steriliser?
No, it steams them.
Really?
Tommy Tippy were doing a deal on a starter set.
Ah.
So the Tommy Tippy ones are, I don't know if their bottles are better, but they certainly look cooler. They look like little alien blobs.
I liked the one we had was like looked like a large round piece of Tupperware. And you put a little bit of water on the bottom. You put it in the microwave 2 minutes and it would sterilise for 24 hours.
Yeah.
But if you got it right, you could get 5 bottles in there. So you could get the day's bottles already. Done.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, all done. Oh, I loved it. That was totally my job as well.
But they're only sterilised until they're open for the first time. So you have to prepare all the bottles at once.
Yeah, that's right.
That's kind of my job. We need to talk about feeding at some point.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, so we had that. That was because it is. It's so politicised, the whole breastfeeding, bottle feeding thing. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that comes up a lot whenever I talk to people about it is that it's quite good for the man, because you can get involved in the whole process more if you're bottle feeding very early on.
Our experience was, I felt like I could make more of a contribution because we bottle fed. Scarlett would not take to the breast, unfortunately, which caused
not
Nicola,
like her dad at all.
No, not quite right. Which caused Nicola an awful lot of angst. You know, it is, women are made to feel quite awful if and I don't think necessarily on purpose, but Nikki felt really bad. You know, and I think it can be a vulnerable time for a human being. I think maybe the whole culture around having babies, the individuals involved, the professionals in particular, need to chill out a bit about breastfeeding. You know, I think they also, we didn't feel, one of the problems we had with some of the individuals is they will see people varying ages and varying intellectual abilities when it comes to looking after their baby, but seem to think that communicating with people is a one-size-fits-all kind of deal.
Yeah, yeah. And it's normally lowest common denominator.
Yeah, and I felt at times like maybe Nicola was being spoken to like an ignorant teenager, where in fact she was a woman in her 30s who was well aware of what the best thing was to do, was trying to do the best thing, was unable to because there were physiological issues and there was also Scarlett just wouldn't take to it. I think that there needs to be a bit more emotional support from maybe professionals in sort of the midwife arena around that. That was just a personal observation of our situation. But it actually meant I could make more of a contribution. And we found that because you know how much your baby's having, they tend to settle and sleep better.
Yes, absolutely.
For more defined periods, whereas we've got friends who are breastfeeding, and although actually they seem to be having a really good experience of it, it does seem like, you know, the feeds are more frequent and so forth.
Yes. No, I think. Yeah, I think we had a sort of a similar situation, but we weren't made to feel too bad about it because we got a lot of support. He was doing okay. Mm-hmm. Both parties were doing okay with it. But because Noah was jaundiced, we ended up going into hospital and they were trying to... It was more important in that position that they get some food into him than it was that they make us feel bad about it.
Yeah.
I've certainly heard that other people have had that experience. Mm-hmm. And again, it's so political and there's so much around it. We'll talk about that. But, I mean, it is... I've heard about more people having bad experiences of it, of not being able to and being made to feel bad about it than others. And I think sometimes it's... You didn't even do the NCT stuff, did you?
No.
That's very geared towards doing everything as naturally as possible. It's a very middle class thing, and we are glad to be part of that club. Don't get me wrong, but it's quite a relief when you stop worrying about that stuff one way or another.
Yeah, we were maybe a little bit. I think because we work around, both of us at the time were working around those sort of environments, we maybe didn't think we were maybe a bit sort of blasé about it, you know.
But you have to be aware, as I mean, you're like, you work in a place, and I kind of do. I kind of do as well. Where it's really, I've noticed the thing you're saying about how they treat every. They kind of end up talking to everyone like no one knows anything.
Yeah.
and it is frustrating when you do know a bit more, when you have put a bit of effort into finding out about this stuff. But it must be difficult not for it not to become a bit of a meat grinder. And whenever people criticize medicine or the NHS or any place like that for that side, that the way that it becomes like that, I always feel a little bit torn about it, because we were treated a little bit like that when we were having the baby in the first place. When we were in and being induced and just left, we were kind of left in a corner for ages. And I think I've said this before, and again, we haven't talked about the birth experiences, and we'll do that some other time. It's very impersonal because kind of it feels like it's by necessity very impersonal. And people who don't do that sort of job, and I'm one of them, can quite happily say, well, yeah, but why would you be a doctor or a nurse or any of these things, or a teacher or any of those things, if you don't innately care about people? And to those people, I would say, well, you try being perfect at your fucking job.
I also think, you know, it's part of the corporate approach that they have to take. I think that, you know, part of it is born out of care, and these people, they want to give care. I think some people... build up a pragmatic callus over time.
When you have to
protect yourself. The other half of the approach is born out of corporate pragmatism around risk mitigation.
Yeah.
I have to tell you these things because otherwise the organisation that's looking after you is liable.
Yeah,
and
maybe.
So, and it's a matter of sort of having to deliver certain information by rote and having to give certain messages to people that means you do tend to deliver it in a sort of very one-size-fits-all manner.
Well, yeah. And we found that, like, it just seemed that people were too busy to keep checking back in on us and stuff. So people would say something, but then it wasn't that consistent. Because there were obviously other people who were whose needs seemed to be more urgent. Or because Amy handled the pain, was in extreme pain, but handled it really, really well. In terms of how much noise she was making. But once you got someone's attention, while everyone's running around, they come in, and if you say to them, oh, I think I might be, this might be a bit hurty, that might be this, I'm being a bit sick, they'll like go, oh, throw a couple of those cardboard things at you or whatever, and then they'd go off to the next thing, because you're not you're not getting their attention enough. Once you did get an individual's attention or a couple of individuals' attention, you couldn't complain about what happened. You couldn't complain about the service. But I just think it's everywhere becomes a meat grinder. That's a completely separate conversation, actually, but like nearly every employer, nearly every place, when you've got a lot of traffic, you're going to deal with the people who are noisier and causing you more problems and need the most help, and you will tend to leave the people who seem to be
in control.
Along that, I've heard of two people. We've known as an aside. We've known two people who ended up having their babies at home in the last couple of months, which seems statistically a bit odd. And I think in at least one of those cases, they went off to the hospital to have their baby and got told that they obviously weren't far along enough.
Wow!
Because they weren't. They obviously weren't in enough pain, so got sent home, and then they gave birth. So it's all quite funny.
Well, the wonderful thing about our friends, very nearly, who very recently had a baby, not you and Amy, but were being told to stay at home. It was only my friends screaming in the background because she was in so much pain. They said, "Oh, well, you better come in," and she delivered within 45 minutes of them arriving.
Yeah,
so they were very close to having a home birth themselves.
It's kind of crazy. I mean, it's a hell of a story, though. So anyway, so Noah, he's getting quite a personality now, and he's very smiley, and it's good. He's very good when there are people round, and he's good at being cuddled and stuff. So we like him. He's paying a lot of attention to the dogs at the moment. That Adventure Time and the dogs. If the dogs are running around, he'll just watch them. Even if he was in the middle of a bit of a grizzle, he'll just be like, especially the little one who keeps coming over and sniffing him and stuff and bringing him stuff, which is a little. We're still not going to leave her with him because she's frankly a brutal monster.
To be fair, it's only the last year that I've been happy to leave Scarlet alone with ours, and they're pretty benign.
Is she? Does she ride them though?
No, but she does try to pull. We've got two Labradors: one brown, one chocolate, one black. And she tries to pull Lois, our black Labrador, around by her collar.
Oh.
She tries to, Lois just sits down and won't have any of it.
Well, they're strong. I had struggled to move our Dalmatian.
Yeah.
We saw our Dalmatian is 9 years old. We'll talk about pet mortality at some point later on, probably. But
I hope you're writing this all down because you're making a lot of promises.
I'll write it down later when I'm listening back to it. And we'll try to anyway. If people want us to, they can tell us to. They can ask us to.
That's true.
And that'll focus our minds
a bit
more.
I'm asking you to.
But I saw another Dalmatian recently that was something like 13 or 14 years old and still seemed pretty chipper aside from a diarrhea issue.
I think, yeah.
Which was a bit of a relief.
You can probably realistically expect to have another 5 years of enjoyment.
Pedigree dogs, they tend to...
Yeah, but they're smaller, aren't they? Anya's seems in quite good health when I've seen her.
So. She's all right, yeah. Seems so, very sad a lot of the time. But I think that's because the little dog winds her up.
Really?
Yeah. Could I think be. Just because the little dog winds her up.
But I think I remember, because I knew her before you had Willow, she always seemed a little bit sad.
Yeah, I mean, she whines a lot.
She's got the weird smile too.
Yeah, Dalmatians, if you ever see a Dalmatian looking like it's about to eat you, it's probably just smiling, or it's about to eat you.
Yeah, I mean, I always choose not to, it's why I wear armour when I come around your house. I choose not to take that risk.
Good. That's the smart thing to do.
Yeah, I agree.
The little one especially will piss on you.
Yeah.
So you have to have armour, waterproof armour.
Some people pay very good money for that sort of thing, you know. So.
I've just written complicated adult relationships, because it was something you said.
Yeah.
I'm going to underline that, I'm sure we'll get back to that. But I think my subtext was, aren't they all a... little bits.
Do you know, I had a funny conversation with it just very quickly on that subject. I had a very quick conversation with someone as I was leaving work. This guy that Jane and I both quite fond of, and it tends to be Jane, myself, and this chap.
You're
right.
Excuse
me, I was yawning. I'm so sorry. I was boring myself.
Oh, it's not boring.
It's usually Jane, myself, and this chap who are last at work, and it sounds like he had a falling out with a chap that he lent some money to, £20 or so, a few months ago, had reminded him on a couple of occasions, that, you know, he'd lent him the money and could he have it back. And finally this guy kind of seemed to rub his nose in it in front of some friends at the weekend and say, oh, I didn't know money was so important to you, and sort of making this chap look like a bit of a tool when, you know, he'd been quite nice about it, but, had, you know, this guy hadn't been forthcoming. And they had somewhat of a dramatic falling out. And I was sort of saying to him, well, how long have you known him? And he said, well, I've known him about 10 years. Now, this guy's about 28 now. Mm-hmm. I was sort of thinking about it, that it is funny how you filter, as you get older, the way you filter friends is very, it's very different. As a child, it's, are you the same age as me? Yes, right, we're friends now, let's go and play. And I know it's cliche, but it is kind of true.
Yeah.
Kids do rub on like that. As I got older, it tended to be, you're cool, you're kind of into the things I'm into, I think you're quite cool, let's hang out with you because you're cool. But I didn't necessarily chime with the people that hang. We weren't compatible on a sort of intellectual basis or emotional basis. It was all, you know, we enjoyed going out and doing rather transgressive things. But
yeah,
when it came down to like the cold light of day, when you're sober and feeling a bit vulnerable, we didn't have that much in common. It's like, so it's like you go through phases. So like in my, you know, 30s, I started filtering people out that didn't necessarily get me on an emotional level, to the point where in my late 30s, I have a much smaller group of friends than I've ever had, but most kind of get who I am, and I can be myself, warts and all, vulnerabilities and all. I don't have to put on the airs and graces and pretend to be, you know, something I'm not, so we can go out and all have a good time and they'll expect something of me. Whereas I felt like, you know, the friends in my 20s, you know, expected performance from me. I was like, you know, loud and funny. That was my MO when I went out. I was the, you know, loud, funny one, you know. But now the friends I've kind of filtered out of those particular adult relationships to ones that are a bit more healthy. I don't know if that's universal, but that's certainly how I kind of feel like I've got to where I am at the moment in terms of the people that I know, apart from you, obviously.
I think I find situations and people problematic still. And if this has a parenting component to it, it's that I do worry. We talked about worrying about bullying and stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure.
I do worry about that. The thing that has come to my attention in the last week, very specifically, is that I don't understand small talk. I don't understand about small talk. I love people. Mm. I really like talking to people. But there is apparently a cutoff where I'm not interested in talking to people about stuff they're not that interested in. If someone asks me how I am or whatever, I'm not going to give them a huge answer, but if someone makes a point of engaging me in something, they have to, because to the point where if I get invested in a conversation or engaged in a conversation, I have discovered that other people kind of drift off and we're only paying lip service to something, and I'm still engaged in the conversation, and that is difficult for people around me a lot of the time. Not necessarily like this whole podcasting thing, just in general, in a working environment or whatever. And I'm starting to find that the easiest way to deal with that is just to kind of retreat back a little bit, because it's going to be really difficult. I mean, you know, if no one else is going to learn to mean what they say and give a shit, then it's unlikely that I'm going to learn to only talk about stuff I'm not really that bothered about. So it might just be easier if in those environments where I'm absolutely not sure about people, where I'm not absolutely sure about people, it's easier just to retreat a little bit. Let them have their fun. Because I don't understand when it's appropriate to stop. And this is obviously a failing in. I'm obviously not socialised properly. It's obviously failing of mine.
Obviously. Maybe not. I don't know. You could be right. I almost have the opposite problem. I was talking to one of my cousins about this on Saturday, where I was having to engage in small talk, and I said to her, I'm fucking awful at it. I just can't do it. The problem is, I'm not very interested in me, so when it comes to, I don't know really what to talk about. And I find it hard to the what do you do conversation. It's sort of, I kind of need, and you may want to, I kind of need something to spark off to get me going.
And that's the thing. To me, that seems like small talk. I'm not... If I'm talking about Alan Partridge or Star Wars, unless someone really gets me off on one or something, or a TV show, it seems to people like I'm super passionate about it. But to me, that's about the... It actually doesn't seem like... It's just what I like to talk to people about. It's what I like to think about. And if when people ask me questions about my personal life or what's going on in my life, or when they're talking about theirs, I genuinely thought they gave even the amount of shit I give about talking about Lost or whatever, then I'd have no trouble with it. But it sort of feels like someone asks you about your garden, they're not really... I can never gauge how far they're interested in it.
The other thing, the other way I always go is I start deconstructing it. By doing the, how are you? And he's going, well, I don't know why I asked. We don't really care, do we?
Yeah.
Let's be honest. And I get like that. The weird thing is, I've started asking Scarlett small talky questions. How are you? Do you have a nice day? What did you learn today? My favourite one being, what do you know today, Scarlett, that you didn't know yesterday? And do you know what she says?
What? Nothing.
That's what she says, because she's watching the telly.
Right. But the thing is, you're asking that because you care about that.
Well, no, I do, yeah.
When
I'm a bit worried that my questions have become rote, though.
Yeah,
I find I'm asking the same things. That worries me. But I genuinely do want to know about her day, obviously.
Because you're interested, and that's the thing I'm not ever entirely sure about. It seems like it sometimes feels like people are tricking me a little bit. They ask me a question, I give them an answer. They ask a follow-up question, I give them another answer. Yeah. I maybe ask them about their situation, or I start talking more, and then they've lost interest, and I feel like I've been tricked into engaging with someone, and now I'm on the back foot.
That's true.
And it's kind of when I'm actually quite happy being in my own head and being solitary, get very confused like with that. It's all right, you sitting over there and me sitting here, it's okay.
We're fine,
it's okay, I don't mind. But then when the man who asked me about my driving test on Friday earlier today, he sincerely, like, he started the phone call. He's not from my office. He's the guy I talked to, like, who a person I support elsewhere in the university. He asked me, and he genuinely seemed to care, and I had no idea what he was talking about. He had to explain to me, because I was like, well, this is sincere. He sincerely cares.
He does not compute.
I didn't know how to cope with it, I have to be honest.
You know the mistake I've been making, though, with my daughter, is she's three.
Which one?
The one we know about, Scarlett. Right.
No, I mean, which mistake?
When I'm asking her questions.
Right.
She's three, and she genuinely can't actually multitask at the moment.
No.
She can either be watching the TV or concentrating on what I'm saying. She can't actually...
Do both.
Physically do... She's not capable of it yet. So it's weird. Because some days it will be... Oh, she won't talk to me. And then I have this wave of realisation that actually... Well, we've turned the telly on for her. She's only really capable of doing one thing. And she's tired. And frankly, how communicative was I as a child with my parents? Maybe I should...
I've just written multitasking, and I've put a square around it.
Okay.
Well, a rectangle.
Right.
What were you saying? No, you were saying about parents and stuff.
Yeah.
I think multitasking in and of itself might be the way it suggests that you're doing two things equally, equally as well.
All right.
Really.
What I'm thinking of is able to easily switch from one to another.
But it is interesting. I find multitasking interesting as an idea. Mm. It's a lie we've told ourselves that we can do.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. We're not really at that point with Noah yet.
No.
But to be honest, just getting him to look at you and laugh and stuff. He enjoys having his... He hated having his nappy changed to begin with, and now he enjoys it to the point where it's almost a bit weird.
Oh, right, okay.
And we had a couple of points in the last week, and again, we scary movies... I'm writing this down because I want to talk about it at some point, slash moments. Did you guys like scary movies before? Like horror movies and stuff.
Yeah, I've never been a mad fan of horror, but I don't mind a scary movie.
We'll talk about it at some other point. But
maybe towards the end of the month.
Yeah, Amy has... Oh, yes, that's true. But Amy has lost all patience. Mm. Not all patience, all tolerance for scary films. And we had some friends over earlier in the week. And we were listening to Noah on the... Well, we weren't listening to Noah on the monitor. Noah was on the monitor upstairs in his bed because he's in his cot now. It's lovely, his cot bed. That wasn't as much of a wrench as I was expecting. Mm. He's moved out of our room into his own room in his cot bed.
Well, once it happens, it's quite liberating.
You don't think it... I mean, it just... It's almost just... It's just normal.
Of course it is.
But he makes little grunt noises, grunts and stuff, because he's got wind and cold and stuff. And both Amy and one of our guests looked at the monitor at the same time, and I was like, "What?" And Amy said, "Sounded like a man's voice in there."
Mm-hmm.
And the guest said so as well. And I was like, "Well, do you want me to go upstairs and check?"
Mm.
She was like, "No, that's a bit weird." I was like, "Well, I can go up and check. It's not a problem." We seemed happier to just leave it unexplored.
Let's leave the man, the strange man in the room.
In there,
all baby monitors give these weird, clicky, weird, echoey noises.
It was exciting and fun, but we'll talk a bit more about that at some other point. I just want to very briefly, because it tallies with what we were talking about, and I'm sure it's a theme that will come up again, but there's a William Gibson, I think it's being attributed to William Gibson quote that's going around my little circle in Facebook at the moment, which I think is brilliant and has related to how I feel a little bit. Sometimes when because I had a real low point last week.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We can talk about low points because I know you've had them as well. Which goes, before you diagnose yourself with depression or low self-esteem, first make sure that you are not, in fact, just surrounded by assholes. which is kind of perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people tell me in relationships with social groups that were quickly quickly falling apart. I won't go into the detail of whether I was in the right or wrong in those situations. I was in the right, but, it's debate, probably wrong. But where someone has spent 20 minutes telling me, has spent a couple of minutes in passing telling me about how, yes, this person screwed me over and everybody saw it happening, but nobody did anything about it because they figured I was being a bit of an asshole. But then when I have said, well, but what? I've been told I was being a bit paranoid and a bit weird. And it's like, well, no, you can't. And it's arisen again recently. You can't tell me that there are these cultural or social things happening and then say that by anticipating that they might be happening, I am being paranoid. You've just told me they're happening. Anyway, that's besides the point. Another thing that happened on Facebook this week is I shared because I want to ask you about your garden.
Okay.
How's your garden going?
It's the I don't really want to talk about it.
How are the tomatoes? Have you got tomatoes?
Yeah, they're fine. We're getting a good crop there. I'm just really depressed at what the summer's done to my lawn, to be honest.
I shared your lawn's you're lucky to have a lawn, so shut up.
Fucking
that's
mess.
Lawn privilege.
Check my lawn privilege.
But I shared a recipe. It was it wasn't my recipe, but I did a couple of pictures of this green tomato.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got green tomatoes,
there's
this really nice chicken recipe.
Okay.
And I posted a picture of it on Facebook.
Okay.
And I had this, and this has never happened before. I post a picture, and a couple of people came in and said, "Oh, that looks nice." And one person said, "Recipe, please." Nobody's ever done that. And I said, "Oh, okay." And I shared the recipe. It's a Nigel Slater recipe. And I shared the recipe, and it was very exciting and also very middle-aged. I had a really weird moment where I was like, this is a weird thing to be proud of. It's not even my recipe. Mm-hmm. And the person who asked said, that looks nice, but yours looks better than the one in the photo on the thing. I think they might have been lying, but it was a very nice lie.
It's called blowing smoke up your ass.
We're going to run out of time, so we can't talk about Bridget Jones's man being dead.
I don't care anymore.
No, I don't care either. I wanted a little bit of follow-up. Blurred Lines, after we talked about it a lot the other week, the Robin Thicke song.
Robert Thicke.
Was it Robin
Thicke? Yes, it is Robin Thicke.
Because his dad, Alan Thicke, is also a Canadian celebrity, apparently.
Oh, is that
anyone who has been caught stuck in a room with my voice at any point in the last couple of weeks has heard me whinging about Blurred Lines. I did read a blog post the other week that may have put forward the idea that the Blurred Lines in question are actually about someone about to embark on an affair rather than about consent. They give key lyrics that suggest this. I'll try and find the post and link to it. But I felt a little bit afterwards. It was a woman who'd written it, and she was writing it from a feminist viewpoint, but saying that it's that the complaints about the song are slut shaming, and actually, if you listen to it, it's fine. And so I will post it because I read it, and it at least made me think.
Can I not like it just because it makes me feel it just feels creepy?
You can not like
it. Am I allowed to do that?
I've been pretty much not liking it really loudly to people who hadn't even heard it, and now feel that they have been intruded upon against their consent by me with knowledge of that song. So yeah, you can not like it. Good. I kind of don't like it. Mm. It's just
gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Also, Louis C.K. Pretty much everything Louis C.K. does.
Yeah.
But the particular thing that happened this week is there's a Conan O'Brien interview with him.
Mm.
I think the thing that probably springboarded him into the viral internet space a couple of years ago was a similar video of Louis C.K. talking about how everything is amazing, but none of us are happy.
Yeah.
And he recently talked on Conan O'Brien about kids with cell phones and smartphones. And he said some really pertinent things about being miserable or being sad and letting the sadness in. But he also said something that just hadn't occurred to me before, which is that kids are mean. Ours aren't really old enough for us to know this properly yet. But he said that kids are mean. And what they do is, one of the things they like to do is, one of the things they'll do when they're kids is they'll go up to someone and they'll say, "You're fat." And then when the other kid reacts and their face, because they're trying it out, he says, when the other kid reacts and their face scrunches up and stuff, most kids will respond by going, "Oh, I don't like that. I don't like how I made them feel." And that's kind of normal. Mm-hmm. But if you say "you're fat" in a text to someone on a smartphone, all you get is the feeling of like, yes, I really stuck it to them, but you never have to deal with the outcome. And there's a whole bunch of other stuff about how you should let the sadness in, which I really think will appeal to you, James.
Yeah,
I'll post that in show notes.
I'll have a look. Yeah, I like the sound of that.
And people can go and listen to it, and maybe we can talk about it next week, or maybe that's just enough mentioning it in show notes.
You never know.
You can listen to, I mean, you've already heard them, James, but the listener can listen to all of our previous episodes at the site. It's 2gm.co or 2grownmen.net, I think.
Okay.
I don't know. And you can
follow the links. I'm really impressed.
Yeah, that's right. And you can subscribe to us on any of the podcatchers that you might choose to use. Mm-hmm. James, I know, uses iTunes.
I can't get enough of iTunes.
I use Pocket Casts.
I'd bathe in iTunes if I were allowed.
But there are others.
I'd worry that it would unnecessarily duplicate me if I did, though.
There are others, though. Mm. Is that a Gremlins thing?
No.
Okay. You can leave us comments. You can email us at our normal emails. You can talk to both of us on Twitter. I'm Nick Sight, NIXSIGHT. James is?
On Twitter, you can find me. I'm James Mom, MOMB.
Yes, he is. Or you can just leave us a comment either on iTunes or on the Facebook thing or on the site, the website, on the post for this.
Or call me on 0774.
We would really appreciate any comments, even if it's just to say I didn't like this bit, or I did like this bit, or Nick was talking out of his arse, or I really liked what James said. It's a shame he didn't let himself cry, because that is all Nick really
wants. It'd be really interesting to let us know what's good, what you like, what you don't like.
Yeah. And I think that's it.
So we can completely ignore it and carry on doing our own thing.
I don't know if we could be more professional, but it's nice to think that we might respond to stuff.
You never know.
Yeah. I think that's us done, James.
It is, yeah. Thanks for listening.
I love you.
I love you too, dear.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.